This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
Rob's father used to have an expression that I love, particularly every Wednesday, when it got to be Wednesday afternoon and the Groz cracked over the airwaves, he would say that this is the point where you're closer to the weekend ahead of you than the one behind you. And I always felt like, yeah, that's exactly what Wednesday means. It means a little something different now because it means Mike. Bump day. Blue 42, Michael Bumpus joins us.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U-corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right!
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Morning, Bump. How are you now?
Good morning, fellas. I'm doing well. How about yourselves?
Doing good.
I'm doing all right. Not so bad this morning.
We sorted through a few different issues. We think we've got the restart of sports figured out. Paul liked Lunchables when he was eight. Dave Wyman still likes them today. I think we're moving along pretty well on this Wednesday.
Those crackers that you could turn into pepperoni pizzas were fire. So question number one, Michael Bumpus, should Russell Wilson come out and tell the team what he wants? Should the team feel obligated when he asks, if he asks for what he wants as well, to give him that?
I think you got to start with, who is Russell Wilson to the Seattle Seahawks? He's their leader. He's the face of the franchise. He's the guy who took them to the Super Bowl twice. He's the guy who is a top 3 to 4 quarterback in the NFL. So when this guy speaks, I think they have to listen. Now, football is different than basketball. Basketball, you can almost demand that you bring guys in and set the deals up yourself. Football's a little more complicated. So I think the Seahawks should listen to Russell Wilson. They should ask him, what do you think this offense needs to take the next step? He has a great idea. He's the guy out there running the show. So there needs to be a conversation. Now, going out and executing it is a little different, especially when you're talking about an Antonio Brown, when you're talking about a guy you're going to bring in who brings a lot of baggage with him. So Russell Wilson has a voice, and he should use it. He should let them know, this is what I think the team needs to take the next step. Because he's a part of this. He's the main component in this whole deal. If you don't have a Russell Wilson, you don't have the Seattle Seahawks playing at a level that they've been playing at for the last 10 years. So you have to listen to Russell. I think Russell does go to management and says, this is what I need. But now the execution part, how tough of it? What's the salary cap? Is he going to come in at a minimum? What's he going to do to the locker room? So there has to be a conversation. And I think that they're civil enough, that they're mature enough, that even if they disagree, they will agree to disagree and go a different direction. But they will do something to help Russell Wilson. And I feel like they've been doing a good job of that the last couple of years and getting him some weapons.
Yeah, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett's a great. I want my quarterback to tell me what he wants. Like, I do. I really want him. And I'm also just going to completely string him along. Like, I'm going to say, that's great. Oh, that's a good idea, Russ. Like, yeah, oh, Antonio Brown, I know. Man, he's talented, isn't he? I mean, there's some other things we got to work through, but, like, there's no doubt he's talented. And if there's anybody that thinks that they could bring the most out of Antonio Brown, it's you, Russ. There's some other things that I'd just string him along. And I'd take it as, like, that's another county heard from in my head.
Not cool, bro. You're just leaving him in the friend zone? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. I'll leave my options open.
To quote wise philosopher Michelle Branch, yeah, stringing him along, you're everything to me. When I close my eyes, it's you I see. You're everything I know that makes me believe. That's how the Seahawks should be feeling about Russell Wilson. I'm not saying that they should follow everything that he does, but stringing him along, man, that ain't cool.
Do you have any idea what he's talking about, Bump? I have no clue. Michelle Branch, and then he started reading what sounded like a script from The Notebook.
It sounds like lyrics. Sounds familiar. I know the lyrics.
It?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you want me to sing
it? I know you're going with that. Let's hear it.
Because you're everywhere to me. And when I close my eyes, it's you I see.
It's you I see.
Okay,
yeah.
Yeah.
I know where you're going.
We're good. Yeah.
Question two. Did the Cowboys goof this up? And I asked that because they've got a quarterback they want to keep in Dak Prescott. They've signed their running back long term. They've signed their receiver. And now they've got their quarterback on a one-year deal, and Patrick Mahomes just yanked the bar way up there. Did the Cowboys goof this up?
Yeah, they did. The whole thing is backwards. I mean, yes, Ezekiel Elliott is a baller. I get it. Amari Cooper, baller. I get it. I'm a skill guy, but you can find a good receiver. There's going to be about 10 to 15 great receivers in the NFL every year. You can find a running back late in the draft. I understand you got to pay those guys, but the offense does not work without a quarterback. And now where they're really messed up is now Dak can sit back if he wants to, if he wants to bet on himself and just get the franchise tag every year. And he's going to end up making more money in the next 3 years than Patrick Mahomes is going to make. So now stuff is really confusing. Now you see that big contract that the Chiefs made. And now Dak is like, okay, I'm going to use that as some leverage. But really, I could sit back and just get this franchise tag if I want to. If they were smart, they would have taken care of Dak months ago. And everything will be fine. Everything will be good to go. But they decide to go to take care of the running back and a receiver. Nothing works without the quarterback, Danny. Paul, the quarterback receives the ball, hands it off to the running back. The quarterback gets the ball, throws it to the wide receiver. It doesn't work without the quarterback. So the fact that they beat around the bush and didn't get to Dak, yeah, they did mess this thing up. It's sloppy. It could have been done a lot more smoothly. And now if I'm Dak Prescott, if I feel disrespected, if I feel like I'm going to continue to be healthy because he hasn't missed any games in his career, I might just sit on this franchise tag and go, look, give me 31 this year, give me 34 the next year, give me 40-something the year after that. If that's the game you guys want to play since you've messed up this relationship, let's play this game then and let's see what happens. So, yeah, I mean, that's Dallas though, man. Does it surprise you that things are messy over there? That's just the way they do it. They definitely messed this up. And now I want to see the approach Dak Prescott takes on this. If I'm him, I'm rolling the dice on myself at this point and being, you know what, franchise tag me, and if you want to trade me, okay, go ahead and trade me or release me, and I'm just going to get a bigger deal somewhere else.
Isn't the issue that the Cowboys feel Dak Prescott still has things left to prove, and that's why they're a little bit nervous about giving him a long-term contract? It's not to say that he has been bad. I mean, he has surpassed any expectations that you would have given a guy that was drafted in the fourth round. But I think that there were times last season where they thought that he would be, I think, better than he was. I'd specifically point at that game against New England where that offense completely sputtered. Yes, New England has a very good defense, but if that Cowboys offense, that's not supposed to be a slouch. That's supposed to actually be able to move the football.
Yeah, if they're not giving him what he wants, obviously there's something there, right? There's a game performance, like you mentioned. There's something in practice that makes them not believe in Dak. And if I'm Dak, I've been the quarterback the last 3 or 4 years, and I performed at a high level. And I'm like, these guys still aren't believing in me. Yes, I've had my struggles. Every quarterback has their struggles. But at this point in my career, if you don't believe in me, then I kind of feel disrespected. And who else are you going to bring in? You know what? If you don't believe in me that much, go ahead and let Andy Dalton run the show, and let's see what happens. You know, let's see what happens with that. We all know Andy Dalton is a decent football player. He's had his moments, but he's no Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott has performed at a high level. He has had his lows like everyone else, but it's about relationships, and that relationship is messed up right now. What is it going to take to get these guys on the same page again? I'm not sure, but if you're a quarterback and you feel like your franchise does not have your back, there's going to be some issues there. But we also don't know. What is he like in the film room? What is he like at practice? There's some things that the public just doesn't see. So there's something going on in that relationship. There's some type of communication that needs to happen. Maybe they need to sit down and talk to a mediator and figure this thing out, because it doesn't make sense to me. I would think that the Cowboys want to lock this guy down. It is so hard to find a franchise quarterback in the NFL. I mean, there's only 32 jobs, one at the quarterback position. But every year there's about 10 to 11 guys who are just getting rotated through the league. So when you have something like a Dak Prescott, I would expect guys to take care of it, lock him down. But something ain't right. And we probably will never know until this whole deal is done with.
Question 3. The NFL Players Association doesn't want to play any meaningless games. That would specifically point to the preseason. Fans are okay with that. I sure am okay with that. They don't want to pay for those meaningless games either. But, Bump, would no preseason make the football that we'll see this coming season better?
No, and a meaningless game, who are the preseason games meaningless to? The guys who have their guaranteed money, the guys who are already on the team. For guys trying to make this team, that is everything. When I was playing preseason, I'm ready to go. This is Super Bowl. This is the playoffs to me. I'm trying to make this squad. I'm ready to go. So who is it meaningless to? To the guys who are established, the guys who are trying to make the team, this is everything that they have. And then with the veterans, they still get their reps. They still get their bodies going and get used to the flow of the game again. So I would expect I wouldn't expect the football play to be poor because they have their starters. These are guys who have been there and done that. I would expect rookies to struggle a little bit more because even for rookies who have or number one picks, first round, second round picks, guys who you know are going to be on this football team still got to get used to the speed of football. This isn't back in the 90s and 80s when Wyman played, when guys just went out there and there's a lot more technicality that comes into this, right? You have to see where this guy fits. You know, how is he going to respond to that? You know, you got to cater to these athletes a little more than back in the day. Back in the day, the man is line them up, get them out there, let's go. Nowadays, these guys have to be nurtured. They got to be brought on slowly, and you got to see what they can do. And there's nothing like practice in a game. You cannot simulate a football game in practice. It is what it is. You have to see what this guy does when he's lined up across from another guy who doesn't care about his well-being, who's trying to make this team as well, who's going to tackle you, who's going to give you everything that they have, all right? Practice now is soft. It is what it is. Back in Wyman's day, they used to get after it. Nowadays, practice is soft. You can see if a guy is fast. You can see if he can get to the football. But is he going to make the tackle? Is he going to make the big play when the ball's in the air and there's another guy coming to take his legs out? Is that quarterback going to stand in the pocket and make a throw when he's getting blitzed off the edges? Those are the things that you're going to miss developmental when it comes to those young guys. Those older guys should be fine. I expect football to still look like it has in the past. It's all about the young guys and developing. Preseason games are meaningless to guys who are established. Guys who are trying to make this team, it's everything to them, and those guys are going to suffer.
One of the things the Seahawks have done best is identifying undrafted rookies. I would say that the Seahawks are one of the more honest teams that I've encountered when it comes to their appraisal of draft picks versus undrafted guys. And because they draft a guy doesn't mean that guy's going to make the team. If an undrafted guy plays better than him in training camp, and with some exceptions, they've definitely hung on to guys. But for the most part, Mark Legree was a fifth-round pick. He got outplayed by Jerron Johnson. Got outplayed by Jerron Johnson, who was undrafted, and Jerron Johnson was the one who made the team. They really do let the talent speak for them. It seems like this is going to make it tougher for guys that don't get drafted. There's no two ways about that. If they don't play preseason games, it becomes harder.
It is how, and then the guys who are undrafted, who are lower in the depth chart, they make the team on special teams most of the time. All right, yes, okay, you can be the third or fourth receiver, but now can you go down and make a tackle? Now can you receive this punt? Can you add value to this football team in other places? Because we already have a number one and a number two, possibly even a number three. How are you going to contribute to this football team in other ways? That's how guys make the team. So those guys are going to suffer, and I think they're going to miss out on some gems. You talk about how the Seahawks always find diamonds in the rough. That's how they do it, and other teams do it as well. So that's where they're going to miss out. Are you going to find that one guy who is on no one's radar who pops week two of the preseason and makes a play and makes you think about him and say, you know what, let's give this guy a chance on defense or give this guy a chance on offense, and let's see what he does. So just like in sports all across the country, I feel bad for high school seniors. I feel bad for juniors who are trying to make that jump. I feel bad for guys who are starting their professional career and they got to deal with this because they're getting cheated on opportunities to prove themselves. And that's all the preseason is. Give these guys a chance to prove themselves, to show that they can be in this league. And if the team that they're playing for in the preseason doesn't sign them and they still put film out there, some other team's going to take a chance on them. They're going to look at the film and say, hey, remember that guy who came down to make the tackle? Let's take a look at this guy and see what he does. So not only are you interviewing for the team who drafted you or who picked you up, you're interviewing for the rest of the NFL, and guys are getting cheated.
That is Blue 42. It's brought to you Monday through Friday by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Michael Bump is going to be in with us for the rest of the 8 o'clock hour. And well, the three of us, I don't know if Paul counts as vertically challenged. How tall are you, Paul?
I'm 5'11". Bump and I are the same height, correct? We're both 5'11". I say on my license, though, that I'm 6 feet tall because I want to be part of the cool club.
Oh, yeah.
But so, if someone were to actually measure me, they would find out I'm a fraud, yes.
You guys are legitimately average height. I am below average height. I'm 5'7". Have you guys ever lied about your height? Bump, what's your license say? How tall does it say you are?
Oh, 6 feet all day, baby.
That's right. That's right.
Clearly 5'11". I've been 6 feet since my sophomore year, Danny.
that's great. The fact, and this is, Russell Wilson has dealt with that his entire life. And Paul, you had heard him talking about with Kevin Hart, another person who would be considered diminutive, talking about different pressures that he's felt about trying to be taller along the way.
Yeah, this is fantastic. I mean, look, when you go to the NFL Combine and you are doing all of the things that come along with it, getting measured, it's got to be a really awkward process. Russell Wilson probably wants to elevate his draft stock, and he took some, I think, very creative measures to do so.
What did he actually do? Because you heard the podcast clip.
Okay, so he fluffed his hair up, essentially, as much as he could, thinking that that would give him a little bit of extra height. And I think that he also thought that he was going to be able to wear socks when he got measured, and he wore the thickest socks that he possibly could that day, so he could add a little bit of extra height to the game.
Well, it sounds like we do actually have that cut. Oh, I'll find my way over to it in just a second. The fact that...
Oh, nothing, that's it. And I was going to try to put some socks under these feet and try to get, you know, a couple extra inches. I had my hair all tall, and I had it all gelled up. And I'm thinking to myself, man, I'm gonna be good 6 foot, 6'1" with this hair. You know, this hair won't go long. And sure enough, I know I measured myself, my true height. I'm like 5'10", 7", and some extra. And so anyways, sure enough, this dude measured me at 5'10" and a quarter. I'm like,
he turned right, you just see this.
I was hot. Is when I'm walking down the aisle, right? And everybody's like, psh, 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 and I'll never forget this. There's a dude on the right, I ain't gonna say who it is. He said to the guy next to him, he said, psh, he'll never make it. He'll never make it.
Wow.
I'll never forget hearing that in my right ear.
I remember seeing Russell at the scouting combine. Like, I remember in the media room coming up and standing right next to him and being struck, sort of, he was pretty ripped. Like, that was, like, I remember, like, the size of his calves and just, like, he looked like an explosive athlete. He looked like you expect, like, a fire plug of a returner. Right, yeah, maybe not as physically, like, broad-shouldered as a running back, but he looked, and I do remember thinking, like, man, he's right about my height. And it was, he did, it jumped out to you. I think if I came up to him now, if I saw a player now, I don't think it would strike me the same way it is, because we've seen more guys that are not big make it as quarterbacks. But I remember at the time being like, the reaction was, whoa, he is short.
Yeah, and why is that a concern at the quarterback position, right? Because you just think of the tall lineman in front of him. An average NFL lineman is, what, 6'4"? I mean, that's small, 6'5". They're even getting bigger now, 6'6". So you think about throwing lanes, and you kind of pigeonhole a guy. You're like, you know what, he can't see over the line, so he's not going to be able to do it. And you always need someone to break the mold, right? You think of mobile quarterbacks. Randall Cunningham kind of broke the mold when it comes to mobile quarterbacks. Think of shorter quarterbacks. Russell Wilson broke the mold when it came to shorter quarterbacks. So you go off of what you know. You go off the past. You go off the history. And there really wasn't anyone Russell size to do it. Now you got a Doug Flutie, who was successful, didn't win a Super Bowl or anything like that, but he had some success in the NFL, but not enough to be like, you know what, small quarterbacks are the way to go. You know, we'll be able to do this now. Russell Wilson is a guy who kind of did that. So those were legit concerns. It's not that people were saying he's incapable, like there's no way he's going to be able to do it. You just look at the pass. You look at your pocket passers. You look at even your mobile quarterbacks. They're usually over 6 feet. You know, the traditional quarterback is 6'3", 6'4". Look at a Brock Hewitt, you know, throw downhill, get leverage on the football. So there are reasons why people were suspect when it came to Russell Wilson. But, again, you always need someone to roll the dice. And I'm so glad that the Seahawks did roll the dice, because now a guy like Kyler Murray, maybe the shortest quarterback of all time, was a Heisman Trophy winner and has a lot of potential. Without Russell Wilson, I don't know if we see a Kyler Murray. Or maybe Kyler Murray is the first one to do it, and then there's a wave of guys after that.
The only other smaller quarterbacks I can think of off the top of my head that have had any success, Drew Brees, who is about 6 foot nothing flat, and Baker Mayfield, who we saw one season look really good and who this past season didn't look so good. So Russ might be just a freak when it comes down to it. This might not be breaking some mold. You know, Flutie, I love Doug Flutie. Flutie is in the New England area. He is a folk hero because of his size and because of the Hail Mary that he threw when he was with Boston College. But he also got banished essentially to the Canadian Football League after a very poor first stint in the NFL after being drafted into the USFL with Chicago, with New England. He did great in the CFL, but, I mean, it took him until 1998, and it took them until Rob Johnson, who constantly got hurt as quarterback for the Buffalo Bills, getting hurt for Flutie to come into a game, and I believe it was against the Jacksonville Jaguars. I remember watching the whole game, and Flutie had this, like, bootleg for a touchdown with 15 seconds left, and then all of a sudden, Flutie mania took over. But, I mean, he was in his late 30s at that point. I wonder, this might be something that we think can happen with other quarterbacks because Russ and Drew Brees have made it successful and because of the first things that we've seen out of Kyler Murray. But what happens when teams like adjust to Kyler Murray after this past season? And do we see what we saw out of Baker Mayfield this past year? I'm curious. I don't know that that mold's necessarily been broken as far as smaller quarterbacks being able to succeed in the NFL.
I tend to agree with you, Paul. I think that he's opened the door to the possibility, and I think that that's important. Because the idea of, he shows the danger of ruling someone out because of height, right? He shows the danger of saying, like, that guy's too short to play, which some people concluded. I don't think that it means it's not an issue or a factor. I think it means that he's got the specific, the way he plays the game and all of the other things that he brings to it, including his how he sees it, his ability, his composure under pressure, that he's able to overcome the disadvantages that he has as a short quarterback. The thing that I look at, and this probably speaks directly to Baker Mayfield, can you play like Russell Wilson and not turn the ball over? I'm not convinced that there are many other people that can play like Russell Wilson does, do the kind of spins that he does, make the kind of, and not turn the ball over. I'll be very interested with Kyler Murray. Can Kyler Murray play like he does without turning the ball over? Because right now, that's the question with Baker Mayfield. He commits too many turnovers, and if he keeps doing that, he's not going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Here's where we'll see the Russell Wilson effect. Kids now, kids who were playing youth football in 2013-14, who are traditionally moved away from the quarterback position right before high school because they're like, look, you're not going to get any looks. You're more suited as a running back, a receiver, or whatnot. So I think we'll see the true effect of Russell Wilson maybe 4-5 years from now, where guys who are under 6 foot stuck with the quarterback position. I was a quarterback in high school. I was a quarterback. My freshman year, I was a quarterback. I had a taller quarterback my sophomore year, so they moved me to receiver. My senior year, they put me back there because I had no one else. I thought I was going to be a quarterback, and legit, my high school coach says, look, you got an arm, you can throw the football, but you'll probably get more looks here. So I think coaches are going to start allowing these smaller guys to develop at these positions. So now, when you get those Elite 11s, when you get those big camps, and you get all these quarterbacks there, you'll see more variety in quarterbacks. So Russell Wilson, I agree. He has made guys think twice, and not just the excluded guy because he's short. The true effect is going to be when these youngsters come up, the class of 2024 or something like that. When those guys start moving up, I think we'll see a little more smaller, faster quarterbacks out there.
And a player's coach? You better be fast.
Yeah, you're going to have to be fast. A player's coach? There is no such thing. That's one of Dave Wyman's teammates said. There is no such animal exists. But how about a coach you want to spend the afternoon with? Who's the most lovable guy in the league? We'll tell you next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I'm not sure when exactly it happened, but over the past 3 years, Andy Reid made the turn from respected coach to lovable coach. Like, is there anybody that doesn't like Andy Reid? And when he was in Philadelphia, and that's kind of a city that you, I don't want to say you can only take it with a grain of salt because it's a city that's tough and has tough. They didn't really like him, but that doesn't really mean anything because Philadelphia tends to have very pointed opinions about different people. But Andy Reid has become, is there anybody now that doesn't like Andy Reid?
I would still say Philadelphia, but outside of that, I can't think of anything.
Even Philly, don't they? Like, they're happy for him to be happy, right? They won a Super Bowl.
I think some people are happy.
Like, that's the world's best divorce. Like, Philadelphia and Andy Reid is the world's best divorce. That's what you – everybody kind of liked them individually. They didn't work together. They separated. Now they've each won a Super Bowl. Everybody's happy. That was the world's best divorce.
I think it's a fair way to look at it, though. I think that Philly is a place that harbors resentment for, at the time, their best quarterback ever, Donovan McNabb. They also harbor resentment for Andy Reid. It's weird, man. Like, you know, you guys know half of my family is from Philadelphia, and it is so strange talking to them about guys who were really successful for them and about all the things that they didn't do. And, I mean, the reaction to the past couple of seasons after winning a Super Bowl as well, it is very evident that that city did not deserve a Super Bowl. That is my honest to goodness.
Oh, really? Oh, I like Philly sports fans, man. Oh, really?
I do, to an extent.
I think they're weird, but like they love like Harold Carmichael and Mike Quick. Like they love those Buddy Ryan defense teams with like Reggie White and Jerome.
You ever had a battery thrown at your head?
Yeah, no, I haven't done that. And
because that's what happened at Philly.
Yeah, there's certainly been elements of sort of the rough and tumble nature of the crowd. But I've always had respect for Philadelphia and their fans. I don't think they didn't deserve a Super Bowl.
I respect
their honesty. You know, they will let you know exactly how they feel about you. You know, when you walk into a crowd and just something doesn't feel right, you're like, yeah, everyone's nice. Everyone's shaking my hand, but they're kind of standoffish. Like they're being fake. You know, I'm from the West Coast. I'm from L.A. There's a lot of fakeness that goes on in L.A. All right. I'd rather have you look at me and tell me in my face, I don't like you. I'm like, thank you, sir. We're moving on. I don't need to fake anything with you. So I can respect that. And then Philly seems like a place where, you know, they'll give you a hug and then curse in your ear at the same time. And it's still all love. You know, it's a weird kind of relationship. And I can respect their honesty. Now, I'm saying that and I've never had batteries thrown at me. I've never been cursed at by Philly fan, so my perspective is different, but from the outside,
well,
I can kind of respect
you. Man, you do not want to go in there rooting for another team, I'll just tell you that much.
Love Park and the City of Brotherly Love names are interesting. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay, Andy Reid is the most lovable, and he talked about and showed just what a lovable character he was when he was talking about the day of the Mahomes deal and how he dressed for the occasion.
Listen, all in all, I think it's a great thing. Very seldom do you come out of a deal and go, you know what, it's a win-win. It's a win for the player. It's also a win for the team, the organization, and so I'm one happy guy. I put on my best Tommy Bahama for all of you today just to celebrate this, man. This is a big day, and it's an awesome thing.
So he put on his best Tommy Bahama, which we all appreciated. Who's at the table of guys you'd love to hang around? Who are the most lovable NFL coaches? Andy Reid's sitting at that table. I think Pete Carroll's there. Like, Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
But he rubs some people the wrong way, but I think Pete Carroll's there. Like, is there anybody that wouldn't consider him like someone you'd like to spend an afternoon with? I think at the very least there would be some sort of activity involved that would be pretty fun.
Yeah, Pete Carroll.
I'm
I mean,
a
he's
biased. Go ahead.
He's gonna keep conversation going. There's not gonna be a quiet moment with a Pete Carroll. He's gonna make sure everyone's comfortable. He's gonna try to connect with everybody. He's gonna be like Pete Carroll at SC recruiting all over again. You know, he's gonna make sure he knows something about everybody. He's going to be the conversation guy to keep things going. So I can see Pete Carroll for sure. I like Pete Carroll. And honestly, I like probably not lovable, but I think Tomlin would be cool too. Because I think Tomlin would just, you know, he'd sit there with a stiff drink of whiskey or something. You know what I mean? He'll hit you with some quotes every now and then, and he'll tell a joke. You don't know whether to laugh or not. You know, he reminds you of an older uncle who's been through a lot, who wants to laugh, but is kind of reserved a bit and has to stay in his persona or whatnot. But I think that'd be a nice curveball to throw in there. Throw Mike Tomlin at the table and see how people react to him too.
I'm not a fan of Mike Tomlin's coaching because I feel like going into games against New England, they have often seemed unprepared, and against other teams that they are just way better than in Pittsburgh. But as far as people that I would want to hang out with, I think Tomlin keeps it real, and I also think that Tomlin would know how to have a good time. And I feel like you want a little blend of honesty, but also people who are laid back to the point of, yeah, they'll do whatever with you. Tomlin, I think, would be a fun hang.
John Gruden. John?
No.
Yeah.
Really? See, I think he's on my cool table. I think he's the kind of guy that put on a show. Like, he's the kind of guy that's able to do magic tricks. He's got a little bit of crazy uncle in him. Like, he's a performer. I would not want to play for John Gruden because I think Gruden is grinds on people. But as far as like a relative at the family table, like I think those, I think the table of the fun guys would be Mike Tomlin's the cool uncle. Pete Carroll is the kind of wild and zany. You're not quite sure what you're going to get, but it's going to be upbeat. Andy Reid is the grandfather everybody wants to be around. And John Gruden's the guy that's going to pull a quarter out of your ear and then tell you to go get some ice cream.
What about Sean Payton? I think Sean Payton, he's the guy who's going to be making side bets. You know, I bet you won't do this. I bet you can't do this. I think Sean Payton would be interesting, too.
I wasn't sure about Payton. I've got, because a couple other tables, there's Dent. Is Sean Payton kind of the hardo characteristic, as Paul would like to call someone that's he's a little too competitive? Because Mike Vrabel and John Harbaugh are clearly to me like the guys that any conversation with them would become a test of one-upsmanship. Like they're going to want to outdo the other, and it's going to be slightly competitive. And in the back of their eyes, you're going to see like a little glint where they think like, if this comes down to it, I can absolutely whoop on you. Like, I will just hold you down and I'll wail on you for a little while. Like, there's a little bit too, there's a lot of machismo in those sort of interactions.
But with Vrabel, I think I would have fun doing it. I feel like the things that Vrabel would challenge you to are actually fun, in that they would be really challenging, might involve actual physical things. I feel like with Sean Payton, it's going to be just a lot of chirping. I'm not really sure I want that, just like I don't really want John Gruden being an actor in front of me for a couple of hours while I'm sitting with him. Like, I think for 30 minutes I'd like him. After like an hour, I'm like, okay, like, stop saying this guy, John. Please, stop. Here's a guy.
This guy right here. What about Zimmer and Bill O'Brien? They're the cursers. Like, they're the most, of all of the 32 coaches across the league, they're the profane ones. Is there any sort of similarity in a family reunion to what they'd be? Because they are. I mean, they are both foul-mouthed. And I say that as someone who is fairly foul-mouthed myself.
I'm pretty foul-mouthed.
They're the guys who curse around the kids. You know, the aunties telling them to be quiet, don't talk like that. They're like, what do you mean? That's what's wrong with America today. We're soft and we're this, we're that. They're the guys who want to toughen America up again and toughen these kids up again. And you need that. All the things that we've mentioned, all these coaches – every family has it. You kind of need that. It keeps you honest, you know. It gives you different perspectives and stuff. But O'Brien is definitely cursing up a storm. Yeah.
Yeah. They're the uncles that let the kid in the pool who can't really swim, and the mom comes out there. He's like, you can't swim. And they're like, he's
no,
going fine. Never. He is completely fine. He's learned a better way to learn than just throw him in.
I have a soft spot in my heart for Bill O'Brien, the person, because this is someone that I used to cover for a couple of years. I actually think I would have enjoyed going out for a round of drinks with O'Brien, because I think O'Brien at the podium is a testy person. I think O'Brien, when you're just sitting with him and having a conversation, I think he's a very real person. You have
That's
to just get him into that phase. He's from where I'm from. And generally, we have a tough time trusting people. Now, I've moved. I've changed. My personality is not like that of most people from the Northeast. I've lived in so many places now, like, I'm not really even sure what I am anymore. But generally, people from there, they don't trust you. But when they trust you, they really trust you. And it just takes some time for you to break through that tough, leathery skin. And once they do, once you do, I think it's really fun to be around.
I think Bill O'Brien, and seeing him from the outside, seems to me like the liability. Like, he's the guy that if you're out with, you're not sure if he's going to lose his temper, start screaming at someone else that's there, and all of a sudden you're going to be in a quickly escalated situation in which fights will happen.
Maybe that's why I like him.
He seems to me to be the guy that, like, you're like, keep an eye on him because he might get us into something that we don't really want to be committed to. It's Danny and Gallant. DeSean Jackson made some statements and tried to make amends for them yesterday. We'll talk about what's next for him, the Eagles, and the league. That's all ahead.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
If you haven't been paying attention to the mean internet streets over the last couple of days, I wouldn't blame you, because it is a hexscape. And one of the people that has been drawing some eyeballs and definitely some controversy is one DeSean Jackson, who decided to repost something that had been made by the leader of the Nation of Islam right here in the United States, Farrakhan. One of them was a quote from Adolf Hitler saying, "The Jews will blackmail America. They will extort America. Their plan for world domination won't work if the Negroes know who they were." And it has been widely panned as dumb, insensitive, especially during a time like this. The Eagles released statements about it. The NFL issued statements about it. And DeSean Jackson would eventually come to apologize.
Here is DeSean Jackson's apology.
I post things on my story all the time, and you know, I just probably shouldn't have never posted anything that Hitler did, because Hitler was a bad person, and I know that. And you know, I was just trying to uplift you know, African Americans and slavery, and you know, just enlighten our people. So on behalf of myself, I just want to let you guys know I apologize. I didn't intend, you know, any harm or any hatred towards any people. I'm for one, I'm for love, and I extend it every day. People that know me know I have no hatred in my heart, and I never try to, you know, put another religion down to uplift my religion or my race.
I think the question of what next is the most difficult one. What does the NFL do? What do the Eagles do after something like this, especially now where things are about as divisive as ever?
For me, the question that comes up in these, and the I guess the way I look at them is there a recognition of what was wrong? And I think there is. I think that there's an understanding. I think everybody, when they saw that he had retweeted a post, or I don't even know how you do it on Instagram, but recirculated a post
Instagram
that included
story.
A highlighted passage which was attributed to Hitler, and that everybody knew that, okay, that's a problem, and it's a problem because it presents, and the quote itself is anti-Semitic. It's and it furthers this idea that there is of an underlying conspiracy, and it's centuries old types of stereotypes that have been aimed at Jewish people, and in fact were used to justify genocide. The next question comes is, okay, how did it happen? Is it possible? And basically what DeSean Jackson said is that I repost a lot of things that I come across, and I didn't fully understand what this meant. Because for me, the most important thing is, like, okay, does it not happen again? Like, that's when something harmful, when something is said, when an attitude is circulated, like, is that going to be circulated? That's the first part. Like, how do you make sure that the circulation or the endorsement of that idea stops? And then the next question is, okay, why did it happen, and what does that signify? And that's tougher because, look, he did distribute something that's hurtful, and it furthers a stereotype and animosity and antagonism that has been historically harmful against a certain group of people, in this case, people of faith.
Just when you thought 2020 couldn't get any more interesting, it does. You know, and this is the tricky part about this, because right now, we all know what's going on in this country, right? The Black Lives Matter movement, police brutality, all that stuff. And you have both sides going at each other. So now you got a black man who put something out that is pretty much doing and saying what is going on in this world, in this country right now. It's divisive. It's dividing people. I know DeSean. I've met DeSean. I've played against him. I've had interactions with him. I don't think he's a bad person. I think he's misinformed. I think that he saw an opportunity just to tweet something or post something, and he felt a certain way about it at the time without doing his research. And if we look at all the stuff that's going on, that's the problem. People aren't doing their research. And the other thing is, in this country, he's allowed to do that, right? He's allowed to post whatever he wants. He's allowed to say whatever he wants. It's just, are you going to deal with what comes after that? And I think that he put himself in a tough position. He is a black man during a time where there are a lot of issues going on with black people. And then he's gone along and kind of, it's almost like he fed into it by putting that post out there, you know, and giving people to think that he's a bigot. And do I think that about DeSean? No. I think I've Facebook has been so crazy. I got on Facebook for the first time in 10 years, like 6 months ago, and it's crazy what people say on Facebook. Like, it is ridiculous. I have to, like, remove myself from Facebook because people just blurt out stuff, and then there's always an apology afterwards. And I think that he just fell into the trap. All right, you read something that you thought was something else, and then you posted it too quickly, and then you didn't do your research, didn't read into it, and now you have to deal with it. Whether you're right or wrong, you have to deal with what comes after that. So now I want to see what the Eagles are going to do.
I'm curious as to what's next, and a lot of people have brought up the last incident that took place with an Eagles wide receiver being involved in a racial controversy as a matter of consistency. Riley Cooper, who at a Kenny Chesney concert in 2013 had said some, I think while intoxicated, but maybe not, some pretty violent and derogatory things about black people while he was there. They have brought that up, and that Riley Cooper, a year later, after playing very well in 2013, got a 5-year contract extension. He faced no punishment from the Eagles. He faced no punishment from the NFL. He did essentially what we have seen DeSean Jackson do thus far. He has apologized, and I think now the question is, okay, well, will there be anything further for DeSean Jackson? My big question is for someone like DeSean Jackson or any athlete, and we mentioned, we say misinformed, which I think hopefully is what DeSean Jackson was. It's hopefully not someone who's harboring that kind of a resentment towards a group of people. Is there an added responsibility to not post things that you would see a person that might be listening right now maybe repost on Facebook, like the same kind of things? Is there an added responsibility for DeSean Jackson because he's an athlete, because he's a public figure?
Shouldn't expect more from an athlete than we expect from ourselves. I mean, I think everyone would be well advised to understand and really consider all the implications of something they circulate. That question about, I think people have, I don't like the fact that Riley Cooper's action is brought up as this immediate reference point, because it's like, hey, everybody's capable of insensitivity, and because he got a contract extension, that means that this guy shouldn't get punished for this. The situation you should look at, it's an opportunity. Why was the mistake made? Why did this come out? How can it be fixed? Like, what does that person, because I think Riley Cooper took a couple weeks leave. I think he went and then came back and rejoined the team. I know he was fined. But it's not like there's a guidebook for how do you deal with insensitivity or bigoted statements. The question is, like, was this a mistake that was made? And if so, like, how does that person kind of educate themselves? To me, that's the most important step of it going forward, rather than you have this series of documented punishments for someone who says something, and depending on how racist it is, we determine like how much they get punished and whether or not they get fired.
I think you got to leave it to the franchise, to the organization, because who knows him the best? The organization. That's why Riley Cooper was able to come back to his team. Then he had black players stand up for him. Like, look, we don't think Riley's that type of guy. He made a mistake, whether right or wrong, he made a mistake. Feel how you want to feel about it. But you have to lean on the people who deal with them on a regular basis, guys who spend time with him off the field, the guys who hire him, who pay him. So we'll see what they do. Was he right? Heck no, man. I was disappointed. I was like, come on, DeSean. You got to do better than that. You went to Cal, man. You know what I mean? Like, that's a tough school. You should know better than this. Can you judge a person off of one action? I don't think you can. I think we all make mistakes. I think that was a big mistake. I think there should be some type of consequence. I don't think you sweep it under the rug and say, okay, let's move on and play some football. Like, he's got to deal with something. But I don't think that's for us. I think that's for the organization. Now, we got rules in this country or whatnot, but the franchise is his own. I mean, the NFL is his own institution. Like, they got their own rules. They do their own thing in that. So you got to lean on them and see how they decide to handle it. And then I want to see what the response of his teammates are. I want to see what the white guys got to say. I want to see what the Jewish people have to say now. You know, let's hear what they have to say, because honestly, when roles are reversed, you always want to hear what the other side wants to say. You know, how are they going to respond to it? How do they feel about it? So I think we got to wait and see how he's perceived by his teammates and what the organization is going to do.
I think it might not be the worst idea in the world for something to happen that just sends a message to all these other players out there. Hey, guys, like, be careful what you post. Maybe right now this is serving as that kind of a lesson.
Don't retweet Hitler.
I guess, especially when it says just, Hitler said
just in
bold.
General, yeah. That's an easy one. That's a really easy one.
And don't get us wrong. Like, we're talking about this delicately, and we're trying to look at every single side of this. Like, what he did was stupid. It was really dumb, and it was bad. Hopefully, he learns from it. That's what we're hoping for. Bump, we always appreciate you joining us for Bump Day. Thank you so much, and we'll see you on Friday.
All right, guys, have a good one.
He is Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. Michael Bump is joining us for the 8 o'clock hour, Wednesdays and Fridays, starting with Blue 42. Up next, Russell Wilson has been sending some messages. Are the Seahawks receiving them? We'll talk about that next right here on Danny and Gallant.